Earth and Sky.
The bottom line for the economics of coastal adaptation in general, is to think about managing a risk.
You're listening to economist Gary Yeo of Wesleyan University, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Yeo researches the potential economic impacts on coastlines of rising sea level due to climate change and how people might adapt. He spoke with Earth Sky's Lindsay Patterson about why he thinks it's a good idea to start planning now for climate impacts that might not happen for decades.
What kind of assumptions do you need to make in order to study the economics of something that might happen in the future?
The sort of background that you need to put forward is some idea of the range of possible scenarios that the seas could follow, how much sea level rise there will be. There's a good deal of understanding about the thermal expansion component, a lot of uncertainty about the melting component. But most recently, we've come to understand that there's also a lot of uncertainty about exactly what the storms will look like along the coasts as the seas rise. And those are the sorts of things that you can think about quantifying. The historical record over the last 50 years or so is used by regulators and FEMA and things like that to determine land that would be threatened by certain return time storms, certain sizes of storms, and insurance premiums and things like that depend on the specification. And so a 100-year storm is obviously a really big one for New York or New England. It's probably a Category 3 hurricane or a big nor'easter or something like that. But it only happens in history at the estimated return time is 1 in 100 years. So there's a 1 in 100th chance in a particular year that storm will show up. But there are all sorts of other storms that cause some damage and are kept track of. And one might be a storm that returns every 25 years. It has a certain character based on the historical behavior of the ocean. If the ocean is now a foot higher, the character of that storm changes dramatically as it hits land. It's coming in a foot higher than it otherwise would be. The storm surge is probably at least a foot higher, but depending on the topography, could be much higher, so that storm, the current character of a two-decade storm, would look like, to people who are standing on the sea, on the land, like what they see as the 100-year storm now. So the damage associated with the current 100-year storm would now be associated with a storm that shows up every two or three decades.
What kind of risk factors are there when you're thinking about what you would want to protect in coastal studies?
Right. The economics of protection involve infrastructure, the cost of evacuation, the cost of disrupting the economy of the city for a couple of days and as they return from the storm. So things like that the economists can quantify, can associate with a certain level of storm. There are also, though, a lot of characteristics of communities that we would like to protect that you can't necessarily quantify in dollars and cents. Communities may be wiped out. The experience of Katrina is certainly an example. You wouldn't want to calibrate all of the massive loss of life and lost culture and the migration, the forced migration that was incurred and things like that, back down to dollars and cents. I think you just keep track of that as these were communities that really shouldn't have suffered that way. They were more vulnerable than they thought because their capacity to adapt was so much lower. They didn't really think that the dikes were going to break. Those are the sorts of things that you can think about. And then on the opposite side, the economics is, okay, what sort of investments and what sort of programs and policies do we need to implement and how much will they cost to reduce the likelihood that those risks will be manifest on those populations?
So you're kind of thinking about it like lessons learned from Katrina?
We certainly learned a lot from Katrina. I'm not sure that it's been translated into changes in behavior in New Orleans, per se. But one of the things we learned from Katrina, we have known from a very long time that the most vulnerable people to climate change on the planet are the poor, and mostly the poor who live in coastal areas or mega deltas. the thought was that was mostly developing countries. We learned from Katrina that it's not just a developing country problem, and the richest country in the world ended up looking like a developing country after Katrina hit and the dikes broke and the flooding happened. We couldn't get the people out. Just the whole manifestation of the lack of the ability to respond for those communities indicated that developed countries are just as vulnerable to coastal storms as developing countries. The heat wave in Europe says the same thing about heat waves. Extreme events create vulnerability, and climate change is going to increase the frequency of extreme events, and there are going to be vulnerable peoples everywhere. We do know that 10 out of the 12 largest mega cities in the mega deltas around the world lie in coastal zones and are therefore vulnerable to cyclones and hurricanes and coastal storms of lower magnitude and sea level rise. There are going to be storms along the east coast of the United States, along the southern coast of Bangladesh, and the intensity of their consequences will go up if they are magnified by higher seas caused by sea level rise.
So can you tell me what some of those adaptations might look like?
Along the developed coastlines, adaptations include things like nourishing beaches, building seawalls, retreating from the sea, allowing marshland and wetlands to migrate inland. The bottom line for the economics of coastal adaptation in general, is to think about managing a risk. And adaptation has the possibility of reducing your sensitivity to a source of an external stress like climate change, changes in extreme events and things like that. It also has the possibility of reducing your sensitivity to the residual stresses that you're simply going to see. Thinking about it in terms of risk also allows you to think about it in the context of all sorts of other problems and stresses that you've got on your plate, to see the degree to which they complement one another and provide some synergy and make each other more effective, or sometimes the degree to which they run in cross purposes. I would also recommend not calibrating the consequences that you're trying to reduce relative to the risks calibrated in those consequences completely in economics, but in whatever metrics, whatever units are appropriate, millions of people at risk of flooding or ecosystem services or something like that, and then engage in a political debate and allow the political system to make the relative value judgments. We want to do this, but we're not sure we want to do that. It's not something an economist or a scientist should say. It's something that a community or society should say.
You've been listening to economist Gary Yeo of Wesleyan University. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.